email ray@rte.ie. The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.
Now, I was watching First Dates about 2 weeks ago and I spotted Shane Clavin. Shane is from outside Enfield in County Meath. And he was just one of those people who stopped in your tracks. A lovely man with an amazing story. And he met up with Avril. And it was his first date in a long time. And they were just a lovely couple. So I said, we have to talk to Shane on the show. And Shane is on the line now. Good afternoon, Shane.
Hello, Ray. How are you?
Good to talk to you. There's a slight delay there, so we'll work with it. So whereabouts outside Enfield are you?
I live in Baconstown. It's only about 5 minutes outside of Enfield. Yeah.
Baconstown, as in B-A-C-O-N. How do you spell it?
Yeah, it's a bit ironic. Yeah, that's the name of it. Yeah, it's a little, it's kind of between Enfield and Summerhill. Like, you know?
Right. I've never heard of Baconstown before. That's brilliant. And is it something to do with pigs or is it something else?
No, my neighbour's a turkey farmer, but I don't think there's any pig farms in the area now, you know.
Right. So first dates, how did it go for you? Because it looked like it went well for you.
Yeah, it kind of went amazing, like, you know, because I suppose leading up to it, I had a lot of anxiety because obviously it's kind of been that long and, you know, I didn't know how it was going to go, like, you know what I mean? I was very worried about how it could go, like, but, you know, it went amazing. Like, Avril was lovely. We kind of got a real good connection, we only kind of met for the first time on the show, like, literally, you know?
Yeah.
It went great, like, you know.
And how long was it since your last date?
It would be 14 years since my last date or my last relationship. I was in 14 and a half years now, yeah.
Right. And a lot happened to you in the intervening years. So let's go back then. You did an apprenticeship in what, Shane?
I did an apprenticeship in metal fabrication.
Right.
Welding, like, you know.
And you were out one Christmas on the Christmas party and you fell.
Yeah, we were out. We were just on our Christmas party and having a few drinks. Back then, I was drinking, like, you know. And I just fell backwards, I'm told, and hit my head off a curb on the street, like, you know. And that was it. I think a woman at the time gave me CPR and the ambulance was called and I was sent to hospital. And then they discovered then I actually had suffered an acquired brain injury, you know.
Mm. And you said there in your...
You know, it kind of changed everything, like, because it's a fairly serious diagnosis, like, you know.
Yeah. You said there in your description that they said, because you don't remember much about it, if anything. Do you remember anything about the fall?
No, I've no memory of that night at all. And even after the accident, I had a good bit of short-term memory for a couple of weeks. People I knew, I kind of forgotten, just, you know.
Yeah.
It came back then eventually, like, you know, but I still have no memory of what happened that night. I only kind of know what I was told by people who were there, like, you know.
Yeah. And how long was it before you came out that you were conscious again?
I was about a week and a half or 2 weeks on a life support machine, like a ventilator. And then I think I came to, and for about a week and a bit, I didn't speak then because I think it was just my voice was sore from the tube being down my throat, like, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, what I'm told then is eventually then I was able to scribble down notes on a paper and started to talk then, you know, initially, but it kind of took a long time then. I was in hospital for a couple of months, like, you know.
Right.
Trying to get back right, like, you know.
And when did you realise, or when were you told that you had an acquired brain injury and this was going to affect you for the rest of your life?
I suppose at first I wouldn't have been able to comprehend what it was because it had affected me kind of very severely, like, you know. So it took probably a couple of months to then realise. You'd hear the doctor saying the words acquired brain injury, but it wouldn't register with me that that meant you were going to effectively have an acquired disability forever. You know, it just, I was kind of stubborn to the fact I didn't want to be wrote off, I suppose. So yeah. I kind of rebelled for a good while. I wanted to go back to work and stuff like this because I didn't want to give in effectively, like, you know. So yeah. It took a long time to accept the fact, you know, to just to sit back and accept that, you know, what I had was severe and, you know, just to try and, once I accepted it, then I was more able to focus on kind of, you know, recovery and yeah. getting better. Like, you know, it just took a long time, like, you know.
And everybody's acquired brain injury is different and has different effects on them. So how were you affected?
Physically, the main thing, the first thing that happened was I lost my sense of smell. That was the first thing that went. And that's obviously never come back. Like, it's been, I don't think it ever will come back, you know, and that kind of affects your sense of taste as well. Yeah. And memory was an issue at first. And kind of, I was just hyper and full of energy and overactive, kind of, just kind of like a childlike state, you know, because of what happened, I just had no control over, you know, I was acting extremely immature and childish. And at the time, I wasn't aware, you know, I wasn't fully aware of how I was acting. It took, I'd say, a good 2 years for me to understand then that, you know, to notice what I was doing and then to try and change that, like, you know.
Well, that's a big thing, isn't it? So whatever way the brain was affected, you went back a few years in your behaviour. Was that a good description of it?
Yeah, you just like, when people look at you, because it's kind of a hidden disability, people, when they saw me, I was still the same as I always was. I looked the same, but I wasn't the same. It just affects who you are. Like, I was a completely different person. Memories were affected at first, but even the way I reacted and interacted with people and, you know, I lost all my, as I said, all your social skills that you had and, you know, all this kind of stuff. I had completely lost everything. So you had to kind of relearn everything from scratch again. And that took a long time to try and relearn all that. Because, like, effectively from my injury, the main physical effects I had, as I said, were the smell and the memory. Yeah. That was it. But any other issues I had, the mental issues and all that, that's just all from, you know, the side effects of my injury and trying to get better and to deal with what I went through. Like, you know, it takes an awful lot out of you, like, you know.
It does, yeah. And were you...
And it just...
Shane, I'm just wondering, were you relearning or learning how to be Shane Clavin again?
I had no real memory of who I was before. Like, I had pictures and stuff and you know, I kind of knew I had achieved a good bit before in different sports and stuff I was good at, but
what had you done? What had you played? What did you play?
I played hurling for the local clubs and I competed in athletics for years. I was good at athletics. I won good few All-Irelands at the shot put and the discus in athletics, and I did some amateur boxing as well, and I won two, I think, All-Irelands at that as well. Like, you know, so I was fairly good at different sports when I was younger. Like, you know, so it just kind of changed everything after the accident. Then you had to kind of relearn everything, and even if I remembered who I was, the person I was after the accident was different. Like, you know what I mean? It wasn't the same old me. I was different, you know. That was why, you know, people, when they saw me, couldn't see any difference in me, and they probably thought I was going to be the same as I was, and it was probably hard then for people to accept that I wasn't, you know. Like,
you're
different, like, you're not intentionally, but it's just
no
just the root of the accident, like.
And what about your family then? They obviously were there supporting you, and were they telling you about the old Shane, or what were the conversations like?
See, they went through a lot, and that was why, at first, like, obviously my mother did a lot, coming up to see me in hospital and trying to mind me at home, because I was wired for the first 2 years at least, like, you know. And then you see that, that's why when I kind of got round and saw all that, then I wanted to change, because you know, you just feel like you're kind of being a burden on everyone, because even though like it obviously affected me, I was the one who suffered, but kind of your whole family are affected by it, like, because you know, it just throws everyone out of kilter, and everyone's relationship is changed, like, you know. But they were all kind of supportive all the way through, like, you know, everyone kind of did their best, because no one really knew much about brain injuries or about, you know, how to deal with them. Before I had mine, I think there was only one other person in our local community I knew who had one, like, you know, so it wasn't that common, you know.
Yeah, so you 2 years where you were wild, so and you'd no job and you were living at home, so your mum had to mind you, although you were an adult.
I was an adult, yeah, but she like I was just full of energy and right. I couldn't sit still. Like, I still have the thing, I still get it hard to sit still. I just, you know, it's just in me that I have to be doing something. But okay. I would just mad and wired and just running around and always had to be going somewhere and kept busy. And like, we live on a farm, so you know, there was sometimes to be bits of work to be done down the farm that keep me occupied for a while, like, you know. But she went through an awful lot trying to manage me or to keep me minded, like. And then the more I improved, then I kind of started to realize how much she sacrificed to try and help me, like. So that kind of gave me more of an incentive then to try and be self-sufficient and to,
right,
you know, go out working and driving and do everything. Like,
and know. Was there a moment, Shane, where you said, I have to change things now, turn things around?
Well, you see, you just, as regards work, I kind of had inspiration to get back to work and stuff. I had a real feeling that I had to just be able to mind myself,
right.
Because I knew, like, I had kind of foresight, like, if, you know, I have to be able to stand on my own 2 feet. And just, I suppose, by looking at Mam, you know, I could see all the hardship she had to go through, like, you know. I just didn't want to be a burden on her or the family anymore, so I went back. I got to do a CE scheme in Enfield,
right?
Originally, and I did that for 2 years, and that was a kind of a stepping stone for me. You work 19 hours a week, part time, like, you know, and that helped me back into the normal work. Because even doing that, the doctors didn't think I'd be able for it, like,
right?
You know, but I just put my head down and did it, like, you know.
Right, and that gave you confidence.
It gave me a lot of confidence that I could do it. And after 2 years, that finished, and I was doing other jobs. I used to mow the grass at the local football pitch as well, and, you know, I was doing other bits like that. And then one day my brother had a big job on in Dublin, and he just said, do you want to, you know, come work? So I said, yeah, I'd go for it, like. And, you know, I did all the safe pass and that stuff, and I started working with him, and that's about 6.5 years ago now.
Right.
And I've kind of been full time with him ever since. Like, since the first day I started with him.
Great.
All them years ago, I've worked the same as everyone, you know, full time, normal hours, you know.
And how does it affect your daily life now? You know, that you don't have taste, we know that. And how's the memory now? Sorry, smell, not taste. How's the memory?
The smell is gone. Yeah, the memory is relatively okay. I kind of, because I was aware of it, I kind of make sure to remember and I need to remember. I'm more focused on right. remembering stuff.
Sure, right,
I mean?
Like, yeah.
I just put in more of an effort.
Right,
like, I mean,
right, yeah.
I suppose nobody's memory is perfect.
No.
But it's not, like, at first it was very bad and I didn't know anyone. But now I'd say it's on par kind of with anyone else, really. Like, right. You know?
And how's the mood? Because I know you were on antidepressants. So how is your mood now, your mental health?
Yeah, the mental health is a big thing. You have to try and keep it right. Like, I was on the antidepressants originally at first, but luckily enough, I you know, eventually through all the things I did, I was off them. But I use different things now to help manage my health. I I used to run a lot on the roads and stuff, and I found it great. Like, I'd always walk my dog and I'd run the roads, and it used to be great for relieving stress and stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I do training in Enfield there, in a gym in Enfield, you know, and it just
Right.
helps me keep my you know, keeps my head right and keeps me focused. Like, you know, it's a great way to relieve tension, any worries you have during the day. You just, when you go in and train, it kind of relieves everything from you, like, you know.
And then a relationship. Was that something that was constantly on your mind, or did you want to get yourself sorted out first before you attempted to invite somebody else into your life?
I think, looking back on it now, all the stuff, the other stuff I did, like even the losing the weight or the job, that seemed impossible. So I just kind of said, I'll do these first, because, you know, you didn't think you'd get them done. Like, the relationship, the thing with a relationship is you can't practice or train for getting fit. You can go running the road, but you can't practice a relationship. Like, you know what I mean? It's nothing else I could learn or study or practice. And with this, you couldn't, you know, because you're dealing with someone else. Because I got fairly independent on my own, and you get used to being on your own. But then that kind of scared me as well, because I didn't want to be sitting on my own in 20 years' time, you know, wondering about what could have been. You know, I wanted to meet someone, like, and I suppose the reason why I did first dates is because at the time I wouldn't have had the confidence to go up and talk to a girl and ask her out. Like, at least with first dates, there was already a date. There was already someone there.
Somebody
you know
else
mean?
Did it for you, yeah. So,
yeah, well, that's the hard bit done. Yeah.
At least you were guaranteed an hour and a bit with somebody anyway. So the rest was up to you.
Yeah, well, no matter what way it went, it would be an experience. Like,
And your sister Yvonne came up with you to the date. Explain that to me.
Yeah, she got to come up on the actual day of the date. Because they were letting people in your social bubble be back.
But it was a COVID thing. So when you met Avril was in a lovely sequined sparkly navy dress. You were in a navy shirt. You could see both of you were very nervous. She hasn't been on a date in a long time either. So I suppose that was a good start, was it?
Yeah, I think it worked, because we were both honest about who we were. Like, you know what I mean? We were both there for the right reason. Both of us were looking to meet someone, and, you know, both of us, as we said, were prepared to be vulnerable to do that. And we were both kind of genuine people, like, and she's a nice and kind person, you know. And even when I saw her walking in, I really had a heart attack. When I saw her walking in the dress, she looked amazing. Like, you know, when Matteo walked her up, like, you know. But
and what were you thinking? What was going through your head?
The nerves weren't too bad. Like, you know, I thought the nerves would be worse, and we actually connected very well. We were able to talk. It seemed, you know, fairly easy for us to chat away, and, you know, it wasn't uncomfortable. Like.
And were you worried about revealing your story about your brain injury?
See, that's a hard one for me, because most people looking at me wouldn't know I had a brain injury, and I have a big belief in equality, you know, in being equal. And sometimes the problem is if someone knows that you have a disability, automatically you're treated differently. And sometimes it's, you know, people will do it out of politeness or accidentally, or, you know, you don't really know they're doing it, but it kind of would. It just, you'd know people are doing it, and it, all I ever wanted was to be equal, the same as everybody else. And the problem with revealing it, obviously, is then everyone knows, you know, you have your disability. But I am proud of who I am. You know, I am who I am, and I'm proud of who I am. And it's not, you know, it is what it is, like. And I suppose on the date it was hard to say, because it's kind of a lot to tell someone, especially on a first date. You know what I mean? It's a big,
it's a big reveal,
it's a fairly big revelation, like, you know. she could see. I think, you know, she was able to see that who I was and that I was genuine, and I could definitely see that in her. Like, you know, she looked amazing and she was really kind. Like, so, well, you know, it was good. It was important for me to do it, I think, because you know, I do have a brain injury, and, you know, it's it's something that I suppose, like, it's I'll always have one. You know what I mean? And it's just how you you have to accept what you like. You can't change what you don't acknowledge. I know I have one, and I'm going to try and, you know, improve as best I can. You know, that kind of
yeah, way. Yeah. But it makes you who you are as well, Shane. You know, there's, and I think Avril spotted that, like, that vulnerability that you're willing to admit to. That's very attractive.
Yeah, well, I suppose I was, yeah, she probably, like, we were just kind of honest about it.
Yeah,
and it probably has defined me more in different things. Like, I'd be a lot more empathetic now and caring towards, you know, different things and animals and trying to, you know, help people and stuff like that. It kind of does define who I am now, but it's just, it gives me more drive and ambition to be a better version of myself. Like, you know, that kind of way. I always say, like, my accident was very severe, and, like, obviously I could have died on that day, and now I have more of a drive in me that if something were to happen, at least if something did happen, at least I could say I did my best and I didn't sit back or have a wasted life or do nothing. At least, you know, I tried my best and I made an effort and, you know, I gave it my all. And that's the kind of a thing I have, you know, kind of a mantra I have now, to just always try and, you know, do your best and, you know, make the most of it.
Well, it was a wonderful thing to witness yourself and Avril on your first date in so many years. And there was an immediate connection there, which was obvious to anybody who saw it. I didn't realise that before you do first date, you have to fill in a questionnaire. And part of that is you have to list 50 characteristics you like in a woman. Am I reading it right? 50?
they had a big yes, they had.
50?
Indeed, yeah, they were looking to see what you were looking for, yeah.
I don't know if I don't know if I could list 10, you know, but 50 characteristics. Anyway, the good news is, Shane Claffin, are you still seeing Avril, who you met on first dates?
Oh, yeah, we're still dating now. Yeah, we are, yeah.
Right? And is it going from strength to strength?
It's good. We're you know, a couple of months in now, and it's obviously with lockdown, it's hard. Like, but yeah, it's the first, you know, it's the first relationship in a long time, but it's kind of going well. Like, you know, so.
Great. That's great to hear. And you have a smile in your voice there when you're talking about Avril, which is a lovely thing. Well, listen, thanks for sharing your story with us, Shane. And we wish you the best, you and Avril the best. And mind yourself. And I know this is a word that's overused, but you are an inspiration, and I'm sure people listening now who are at the early stages of what you've been through will find hope in your story.
Yeah, I hope it helps, and just, it's just a bit of belief. You know, you have to have kind of belief in yourself, and that's the start of it. Like, you know, never give up, never give in, and you know, just do your best. You know.
Yeah. I hope you're well. My girlfriend Mariana and myself watched the episode of First Dates in which Shane appeared. We were totally in awe of how caring, sensitive and kind he was, and also how lovely and supportive his sister was despite the challenges he has faced. So there you go. Can you say well done to Shane? Haven't seen him in years and years. Not back the days we worked in the nightclub in Johnstown in Enfield, says Keith. There you go.
Ah.
There, you remember him. Now, okay, Shane, great talking to you. I'm sure we'll talk again. Mind yourself.
Oh, that's fine.
Right.
See you
now.
Thanks, Ray.
Right. Bye now. Bye.
The Ray Darcy Show on RTE Radio 1.